Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 40% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hour number two of the Hoffman Show here on the Team 980. Always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We're streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980, 530. Logan and I have a nice little chat about John Bates and Luke McCaffrey answering some mailbag questions on Take Command. You'll hear that at 530. 6 o'clock, Greg Wyshynski is going to join us from ESPN talking Caps. Right now, time for the day's top story, which is the Cowboys did a thing. Time to talk about it with someone who's there.
Today's top story from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not my beat.
Mike Leslie covers the Cowboys and more for WFAA TV, the ABC affiliate in Dallas. He joins us now. Mike, what's up, dude? How are you, my friend?
I'm doing all right. I'm just getting up from a nap, trying to get ready for tonight's Stars game that won't start until close to midnight. So we're doing well. How you doing?
How late's the actual puck drop time?
8:52.
Yeah, that's though. When you're in Central Time and you get stuck with the West Coast
Central Time, yeah, 9:52 your time.
Yeah, so. Yeah. When you are in the Western Conference and you are actually Central Time. That can be a bit of a rough one, but that's the gig, man. You got to do
that's
it.
Exactly.
Plus,
right.
you're a TV sports guy. You're not on until like 11 o'clock at night. Or I guess you guys have the 10 o'clock news. You're not on until like 10:25 most nights anyway.
Oh yeah, I'm a night owl anyway. But when I got a 3.5-year-old and 8-month-old, they keep me ragged at the other end of the day too.
I was about to say. Plus, you got kids, so you don't care about sleep because if you cared about sleep, you wouldn't have had kids because that's mm-hmm. how that goes. So, but you're also a guy, Mike. You've had a couple of funny run-ins over the years with various Cowboys players. So, how excited are you personally for George Pickens to come to town?
Yes. We can start the clock now between this moment and the first tweet of mine that will aggravate George Pickens. Start the timer running right now. I'm intrigued. I am intrigued. This is a team that has needed to do something. This is a team that is rather desperately needed to do something like this for at least the last two off seasons. And this is the first time, really, since Jerry uttered the phrase that we're going to be all in, that he's done something that felt kind of all in, at least all in-ish. This is a decent-sized move from a franchise that needed a wide receiver, and they're better today than they were yesterday. It's an encouraging step for this team.
So we say that, right? Because on any given snap, George Pickens is the greatest wide receiver in the history of the NFL. This man has literally made some of the greatest catches I have ever seen, including the one he made for a touchdown against Washington last year, where I thought the ball was going to be 8 yards out of bounds, and somehow he came down with it. And I was just like, what? Did he mm-hmm. no, he caught the ball? Like, that's who he is. The problem is the rest of the snaps, where he is incredibly inconsistent. We know that there are issues attitudinally on the field, on the practice field, and there's kind of this NFL-wide, hey, nobody takes someone that Mike Tomlin gives up on type of thing. Why can this work? What about the leadership, the room, the atmosphere, whatever it is that you think it can work in Dallas? Why can it work?
Frankly, I'm still grasping on that piece of it because all of the questions that you're laying out there are absolutely valid. And until we see it in action, we really don't know. Now, do I think Dak Prescott is a good enough leader? And do I think that CeeDee Lamb, frankly, is a good enough leader for those two guys to welcome him into this passing game and have those three prove to be a pretty lethal combination? Yeah. On the field, there's a lot of evidence that suggests this can work, especially when you consider the way that Pickens does his thing and the way that CeeDee Lamb does his thing. It looks like these are two guys that can complement one another really nicely, with CeeDee Lamb doing a lot of his work in the intermediate range and in the middle of the field, and Pickens being more of a weapon that can be useful on the outside and deeper down the football field. They feel like a good match, the two guys that do things differently that can give Dak Prescott multiple options. So I think that there is football evidence that this can work. There's football reasons why this can work. And I do think that Dak and CD both have the leadership wherewithal, the leadership quotient to be able to welcome a guy like this into the franchise and make it work. I've seen some reporting today from Peter Schrager from ESPN that the attitudinal issues, as you put it, which I thought was pretty on point, may have been overblown. Now, this is the perfect time for that kind of story to come out. Of course, that kind of, you know, language is going to come out right now after a trade. It wasn't all that bad. Of course, people are going to say that today after they trade him away. So we will see in due time, once we actually see him in Oxnard for training camp and once we see him up in Frisco at the Star, and how he actually interacts with this team. But again, so I don't really have a real good answer for you, other than that I think Dak and Zeke are mature enough individuals to handle it on their own front. But football-wise, I can see why and how this can work.
Mike Leslie, anchor and reporter for WFAA-TV down in Dallas. And with all due respect to Peter, my guy, we have all, like, so much of the stuff has been caught on camera. It's overblown, yeah. Except for that one that's on camera, that one that's on camera, that one that's on camera, and all of the other things, and the bad film and all that kind of stuff. But there's no doubt that Dallas needed a vertical threat. He is probably the best one they could have gotten, especially when the draft board doesn't fall in a way where they get what they want or they choose to go other directions. And we'll talk about what they did in the draft here in a second. But then I will give you the fairness here to say, Mike, like, what's the best version of this? How, if George Pickens is a stable version of George Pickens and gives them a legitimate downfield threat, do they have enough else around CeeDee Lamb? Have they done enough with the running back room, et cetera, the offensive line, how they've rebuilt it, to be a top 10 offense and a playoff caliber team in 2025?
I think this does enough for them to get back into the playoff conversation. I don't think it does enough for them to necessarily usurp Washington or Philly at the top of the division, but I think it makes the NFC East strong enough now that maybe you might see this be a 3-playoff team division this season. But I still think Dallas slots in third in that pecking order right now after this move. I think this move helps them in a variety of ways, because prior to this move, you had CeeDee Lamb truly all by his lonesome in that wide receiver room. All due respect to Jalen Tolbert and Kevontae Turpin and the cast of thousands that they've tried, nobody has really popped. And they haven't done a good enough job of figuring out a way to utilize Kevontae Turpin's speed, which is a legitimate weapon, as we have seen, as you guys in Washington have seen all too well in the return game. They have not done a good enough job of utilizing that in the passing game. So it was CD, and who knows what the heck else was going to happen with this wide receiver room over the course of this summer and going into the season. So they were in a position where it was going to be really easy to defend this team. Double team CD, who else is going to beat us? Now that becomes at least harder. And because that's harder, now you just, in addition to making your number two wide receiver better, you also just made your number one wide receiver better, because now CD is going to be able to work at least some of the time one-on-one now, or at least less double teamed than he would have been, less of a safety shade over the top than it would have been. The defense is going to have to account for somebody else. So that's going to make CD better. That's going to make Jake Ferguson at the tight end position better. And by osmosis, through all of those things, now your offense does get better, not just with the upgrade at the number two wide receiver position. So I do think this helps them in a variety of ways. I do not think that they are all of a sudden, hey, that was the magic elixir and now the offense is going to be fantastic. But I do think it makes them better enough. And with, I think, what should be a good defense this year with Micah Parsons leading the charge, and shoot, the Marvion Overshone keeps on making strides that look like he's going to get back faster than we thought he was going to be. I like what they did with the Ezeraku pick in the draft. I know we're going to get into that here in a moment. So I think they've at least worked their way back into, hey, this looks like it might be good enough to hunt for a playoff spot. I'm not going much farther than that just yet.
Yeah, it does feel like they're now in this group of teams that is very large going into every NFL season, but maybe they're towards the top of it if Dak plays at a top 10 quarterback type of level, which he's fully capable of, where it's like if they don't have injury issues, they should make, or they can definitely make the playoffs. And again, that's a large group of teams in the NFL. There's very few that are either definitely better than that or definitely worse than that. But it seems like this move probably gets them firmly back in or higher up in that tier. So the draft is where a lot of people thought they'd go receiver, whether it be Tet McMillan or maybe Matthew Golden even at 12. Instead, they go Tyler Booker, who attitudinally, Mike, since that's our word of the day, is the exact opposite of George Pickens, just like the best dude ever. Interesting player on tape for sure. What was the reaction in Dallas to that pick, and how do you think he fits with what they're building on the offensive line with a lot of draft capital invested over the last couple of years?
It's interesting your question about what was the reaction to the pick and how it might be different today even than it was on draft day. Because on draft day, George Pickens wasn't a thing, and Cowboys fans were livid. The soundbite that we got from one Cowboys fan, I mean, screaming down the barrel of a camera that we had out there at the Star for the draft party about how we need weapons, and he's losing his mind about how did you guys not draft a running back or a wide receiver? We need people to help Dak Prescott. We need people to help Dak Prescott. They were not happy with it. I think the ensuing 24 to 48 hours as people got to know Tyler Booker, Micah Parsons included, I think you probably saw Micah Parsons' initial reaction to the draft pick. And then within an hour or two, Micah Parsons had kind of come around real fast on Tyler Booker. So there was a shift through the weekend in terms of how people reacted to the pick and how much people liked the guy after they got to know him even just a little bit, and some of the things he had to say about who he's going to be for this offensive line and for this franchise. So I think now the draft has come and gone, and certainly this day has come and gone. I feel like people feel a lot better about that first-round pick, even though, admittedly, a guard at 12 is rich. That's rich no matter who the player is. I think at the end of the day, when people look back on this draft 5 years from now, it's going to matter less what number you got the guy at, and it's going to matter more, did you get a player? And I think there's a pretty good chance that when we look back at this draft in 5 years, the Cowboys are going to be able to say, we got a player in that draft.
For sure. And they also got a couple other guys later on that I like. And part of it is like, look, you get some name recognition, some guys that we were looking at here in Washington. Ezeraku is a guy that a lot of people thought that the Commanders could take at 29. They obviously go in a different direction. Is there another pick, whether it's Ezeraku or someone else, that you're like, I think this guy makes a big impact? I mean, Siobhan Revelle is another really interesting one. Jadon Blue is an interesting one. Like, those are guys that have distinct positives, distinct negatives, could work, couldn't work. Is there a reason that any one of, let's just say, those three guys, Ezeraku, Revelle, Blue, you think really fits with the Cowboys sooner rather than later?
Yeah, listen, those are the three guys. Those are absolutely the three guys that should be jumping off the page at you, because those are three guys that can, in my opinion, come in and be impact players for this team right out of the gates. I think Ezeraku can be part of their basically six-man rotation of their edge rushers from day one. And I think Revell, as long as, I mean, he's still on his recovery path right now, he's not back to 100%. They think, they hope that maybe during training camp that day may come. I think he's going to start training camp on the PUP list, but they think, you know, maybe before week one he's back to being himself, or at least back healthy enough to go out there and do everything. Whether or not he's himself will obviously be a big linchpin in whether or not he's the player that they want him to be. But before the injury, he was a first-round pick. And even despite the injury, people had him pegged as a second-round pick, and Dallas was able to get him at 76 there in the third round. So there's a lot of value in that pick, and he's another guy that comes with, talking about Tyler Booker and the attitude and the positivity, he's a guy that comes with an awful lot of positives from a personal standpoint. Guy who was working in an Amazon overnight distribution center for a period in it, earlier on in his career before football really started to pop for him. Had a great year at East Carolina and had pretty much everybody in the SEC all over him. Hey, come play for us for a year and then go to the NFL. And he said, these are the people that trusted and believed in me. I'm hanging here. And then had a big injury, came back from that injury, had another big injury, and now here he is still working his way back into the NFL draft. He's kind of a Disney movie all by himself, frankly, with the twists and turns that his life has taken. I think Jadon Blue, if nothing else, pure speed. And Dallas's offense could use a heaping dose of that as well. They did not have anything in the way of a passing game to anybody coming out of the backfield. Hunter Liffke had their longest reception last year. Fullback Hunter Liffke had their longest reception out of the backfield last year. I think Jadon Blue's going to change that at the very least.
Last question for Mike Leslie, because it's required when we have someone on from Dallas. My joke during the draft, Mike, was I really like what Dallas did, but don't worry, Jerry will mess up all their second contracts. What's the latest with Micah? Is there any chance this thing gets done in any kind of regular order fashion for the rest of the NFL, or is Jerry going to wait far too long and then wind up having to pay him $10 million a year more than he would have if he had just paid him early?
This is going to be the top story on First Take every morning for the entire summer. It's going to come and go, and the deal will get done just like Dak and CD did right before the regular season, because that is Jerry's MO. That is Jerry's desire, is to have that conversation percolate around his team day after day after day, week after week after week, because he sees the value in that more than he sees the value in whatever million or two a year that he might save himself in signing Micah now, or heck, 6 months ago, or whatever, you know, whatever the case may be, where it would have been smarter. We saw this with Dak. We've seen this with CD. We've seen this with Dak twice. We saw this with CD Lamb. This is what he does. He's what he's doing with Micah Parsons right now. And it's what he's already telegraphing he's going to do with Tyler Smith. This is what he does. The rest of the league looks at him and goes, you're out of your mind. On some level, from a non-football side of things, maybe there is some logic, because his team is always talked about and they do print money because of it. I guess there's probably a positive side of this strategy, but from a football perspective, it does not work, and it continues to not work. They're good at drafting. That is the list of things they are good at from a team-building perspective. The rest of the list, they leave a ton to be desired.
Jerry should, like, the counterfactual here is, what happens if you're good? Like, how much money does that make you? And does it hurt the brand to be constantly made fun of for being absolutely foolish for, I don't know, we're going on two decades now, three decades now? It's just, it's so very silly. He's just not going to stop, because that's who he is. He's just, he's Jerry.
He's set in his ways. It is going to be his way or the highway forever. And I said that at one point leading into, maybe it was after they made the Tyler Booker pick, that everybody was kind of railing on, why would you pick a guard this early? What are you doing? That's not how you build a franchise. And again, the conjecture on Tyler Booker has come around rather quickly. But regardless of how you feel about the pick and about picking a guard at 12, it doesn't matter. You're shouting into the void. You're not going to convince him to change. This is what they believe. This is what they are going to do. That's the all of it. And anything that you're trying to speak into existence to the contrary is just frankly a waste of your time, because they have their MO and that's what they're going to do.
This is an awkward question to ask, but I'm going to ask it anyway, and I'll be as delicate as I can. When nature ultimately runs its course with the 80-something-year-old Jerry Jones, and eventually Stephen Jones is running the franchise, that is the delicate setup. Will Stephen do the same thing?
I understand
thing?
Where you're going. Yeah,
will
yeah.
Stephen do the same thing? Or when the second Stephen's in charge, will he be like, all right, early extensions. I get how this is supposed to be done.
That's a very interesting question, because there is certainly a tug of war between the two of them on a variety of topics. And we've seen that. Shoot, we've seen that for 30 years. That goes all the way back to Jerry Jones. This goes all the way back to Deion Sanders, signing Deion Sanders in the mid-90s and Stephen having Jerry up against the wall. There has been a tug of war. There has been a difference of opinion in terms of how to build a roster. This goes back to, obviously, the Johnny Manziel, Zach Martin decision. I mean, there have been multiple instances where they have been at odds, and Stephen does seem to be the more pragmatic, lower-key, more conservative approach mentality, and Jerry's the wildcatter, we're going to do whatever we got. And we've seen through the history of this franchise how the needle has moved more in Stephen's direction over the course of time. This is a team that used to be really active in free agency. They'd go out and make splashy signings like Deion. They'd go out and make splashy trades like bringing in Joey Galloway. And I think because some of those things didn't work, Stephen has been able to kind of periodically and systematically work his dad in his direction, or at least win more of the battles because he's had things work out. Zach Martin working out over Johnny Manziel was a big feather in his cap to get dear old dad to let him, you know, take the reins a little bit more and have a little bit more sway in these decision-making processes. So we've seen how it has evolved. So it will be interesting to see where, like, does the needle peg in the other direction when, as you said, when nature takes its course. It will be very interesting to see how that evolves whenever that time comes. But hard to say for sure, but it does feel like there will at least be a noticeable change, if nothing else.
For sure. And at the very least, in this very one specific contract extensions for in-house superstars way, like, that has been a very Jerry way of doing business. And we'll see some years from now how that changes over. Mike Leslie, WFAA TV in Dallas, ABC Channel 8. Mike, always a pleasure to catch up, my friend. And
likewise.
Enjoy the very late hockey game tonight.
Will do. Will do, buddy. Take it easy.
You too. That's Mike Leslie with us here on the Hoffman Show. When we get back, we will let you hear a couple of mailbag questions that we got into Take Command about two guys that we get questions about a lot. One tight end, one of the backups, and one receiver who a lot of people wanted to see a lot more of last season. That's next on the Team 980.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available if at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app, and we're streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980. Take a Man Mailbag is how we start the week on our podcast, the one I do with Logan Paulson. And we got two questions about John Bates and Luke McCaffrey that I thought were really interesting, and you know, we get questions about those, too, on this show as well, so I wanted to share this portion of the pod with you. For more from me and Logan, of course, search Take Command wherever it is you get your podcasts, including on YouTube, where you can watch full episodes at the Team 980. And without further ado, here is me and Logan. Don't forget, we got Greg Wyshynski coming up talking Caps at 6 o'clock. But now, without further ado, your boys talking ball. Take Command Podcast, wrapping up here with our mailbag. Again, your questions, HoffmanShow.com. Use the contact page or Instagram at Hoffman.Sports or Logan_Paulson82. This one came via email, Logan, from Austin, who said, can you and Logan elaborate on how players who have good to great separation don't get more targets or production? Luke McCaffrey comes to mind with having multiple games with the best separation, but low production. I've been scratching my head why he doesn't get more targets if he can separate. So just to, I think, back this up, support this with some data. I think a lot of folks look at the separation data from Next Gen Stats, and they're, you know, at each game, there's like a little web graphic that Next Gen Stats produces that's available on their website. And often Luke would have the highest separation. Obviously, folks get film clips or whatever. They see like, oh, Luke was open here. But he obviously did not have a ton of production and didn't see a lot of balls in his freshman season, his rookie year, if you will, in the NFL. So why does this happen?
Yeah, so I think couple things. One, I think the way that they determine that is like its proximity to nearest defender based on GPS data.
Yes.
And so, for example, like Logan Paulson has great separation data versus, I forget what team it was, but like back in 2017. Why is that? Because Logan Paulson was just chipping and running to a flat, and I was not covered on all those routes. Like, so it looks like, oh, wow, Logan's really rounding people up. Look how open he is. He's doing a great job. You got to go back and watch his reps to kind of determine whether he's in the progression or not. And so I think like for example, like, you know, you're running a go and you're clearing out, like you're really not in the progression, right? And the defense at some point is going to drop you. And so I think like, they're going to be like, this is a go. I can feather off this and make this play. And he'll be look like he's wide open, like on a post or whatever. He looks like he's wide open, but the quarterback's not, that's not part of the quarterback's vision. People say, oh, well, that's dumb. The quarterback should be looking at him. He's wide open. You can't look at everyone all the time, right? You have to give the quarterback a progression, an opportunity to say, this is one, this is two, this is where the ball goes for my third opportunity here. Like you can't a full field five guy deal. Like that's cartoon stuff. It just doesn't work. Obviously Tom Brady or Peyton Manning could do that, but even them, they understand base pre-snap, like where the ball relatively should go. So I think with Luke, there was a lot of times where people were like, oh, his separation data was so good. I think Cleveland was the one that comes to mind. He ran two chip routes in that game and literally was standing by himself on third and 15 with not a soul around him for about 10 yards. So that's going to really inflate your separation data because they say, oh, here's a play where no one was rounding the 10 yards. The algorithm or the computer program doesn't understand that like he's not a relevant component to that play, right? So when you watch him on more competitive downs, like the number normalizes a little bit, right? And I think that's where I'd say with Luke's separation data, you got to just kind of go back and say, hey, here's a couple plays. Like, I think there was another play where someone screenshotted Luke. He was running like a through, you know? And so on dagger, which is, I think if you have this clip, I'm sorry if I get the concept wrong, but I think it was a deep in and a through route, right? So that through in every offense I've been in is called a love of the game through, right? You're just running it because you love football. You're not going to get the ball. So as you run through there and the quarterback's getting ready to throw, the defense knows that too. So they're going to collapse on the dig. The ball's going to go to the dig. And Luke's going to look on the screenshot like he's wide open. And I think that's another thing about like the types of route he's running, where he was in the progression, like where, what's the down and distance. All those things factor into Luke's open score and his relative lack of production, I think.
Can I ask you then what was probably a lot of fans' follow-up then on dagger? It's for the love of the game through, and if the defense knows it, it's going to collapse on the dig. So again, you have the outside receiver who's coming up, running, what, 15 yards on a dig? And then, you know, your classic in-cut, right? 90-degree in-cut. And then you have an inside receiver, in this case, Luke, a slot, who's running a go, right? Just straight up the field. And if the defense knows that that's the concept and they're going to collapse on that dig, why not like fake and then throw the go, right? So how do defenses play that is not an option and thus shutting down that hypothetical?
Yeah, so obviously that route is called, it's an alert, right? It's right. Alerted versus two man, right? So like if you get two man, so split safety and it's man coverage, like that, you can throw that route. So for those Commanders fans, Kirk Cousins threw this route to Santana Moss versus Baltimore in 2012. So obviously it happens so rarely, I can just call it off the top of my head, but it does happen, right? Yeah. You see guys do this all the time.
It happens like once or twice a season where you're just like oh, sick. The throw is open on dagger. Yeah. You'll love to see it.
Right. But like the way defenses are, like, and the way you run that route is they have to respect it. They have to because the way you coach it is like, so let's say I'm running the through, which I ran a lot of in my career. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. For the love of the game, Logan Paulson.
So if it's cover two and there's a safety to my side of the field, I'm running through the inside shoulder of that safety. I'm going to run up on his toes and run through the inside shoulder, making it so that he can't bypass me. Like that's how they coach the route. If he bypasses me, then we're going to come back. They're going to put Santana Moss there. We're going to run all go special. He's going to run the same route and he's going to hit it for a touchdown. Right. So that's where like, you got to kind of say on this play, we're trying to throw the dig, but if the defense is not respecting the through, then we're going to call a different play and get the quarterback. So his eyes are where we want them. So we get the ball completed the way we want to get it completed.
Right.
And so that's what I'd say to that.
Yeah. The quarterback is going to look at that and just to make sure, right. He's going to make sure that the dig is open. And you know, if the safety were to just be like, that's Logan Paulson, I'm literally not covering him, then yeah, your quarterback is probably going to see that he's wide open. But these things happen in the NFL so fast, and people love to, like, this is why screenshots are relatively useless. Because like there are times where you screenshot, and it happens to me when I'm watching stuff frame by frame, like trying to understand a blocking, you know, surface or whatever for a running back, and you hit, you know, one, two, oh man, there's the hole. And then you hit the arrow button one more time, literally the next frame, and there's a body in the hole, and you're like, that was wide open. Where did that guy come from? And you have to like go back and like trace the dude to be like, oh, he was a looper, he was this, or just that linebacker was shot out of a cannon. And so these things happen very quickly. And so, you know, the safety will take, it's kind of a dance. Like he's going to take his back pedal. He's going to say, okay, I respected this. Now I'm going to see if I can break on this ball and break up the dagger. And the quarterback's going to try to fit it in there, and the receivers might take a huge shot. Or if he takes, you know, one too many steps to respect that throughout, then you're going to have an easy one, and maybe you got some run after catch. But like those are the margins in the NFL. It's steps, it's half steps. And for a guy like Luke, I think screenshots can tell one story. Data can tell one story because of where the progression is, and the film with a little bit deeper understanding can tell a different one.
Yeah, and I love that you brought that up, especially with the running back stuff. And it's receivers too, because it's like I've gotten a bunch of screenshots of like, look at this dude wide open. But then when I go look at the clip, and the guy's taking a screenshot, like the quarterback has already thrown the ball, or he's already kind of made his decision. Like the timing of this is so important. Like everyone talks about dagger. Like, why do you predetermine the dig? Like one of the reasons you have to predetermine the dig is because like the throw has to be on such good timing, right? So basically, when the quarterback gets to the top of his drop, if that underneath hook player attaches to the flat or attaches to the pivot route, I'm throwing the dig, right? I'm trusting that the receiver is going to protect the throw. And that's why NFL timing is different than college timing. It's different than high school timing for sure. It makes it so much more challenging to make these throws because the quarterback has to, the quarterback has to be accurate, has to have great arm velocity, but also trust throwing windows in a way that is so unique. And that's why you see like John Gruden on Instagram, like losing his mind about the evolution of the college quarterback position. It's because of stuff like this, right?
Yeah.
Because of the anticipatory nature of the throws. And again, like it, unless you know what you're looking at sometimes, and I'm not trying to gatekeep information here.
Sure.
But sometimes it gives you a false narrative of what's realistically possible in the context of the play.
For sure. And if you want to see what happens, if you throw a dagger late, the dig late on dagger, go play Madden and try to throw a run dagger and see how many incompletions you throw or how many times you get picked off. Say that from experience. Logan. Sometimes we're a little late on the dig and then I just need to cut that sucker loose. All right. Last question comes from Max. Max says, I've got a Take Command mailbag question that should be near and dear to Logan's heart. Are you ready, Logan?
Yes.
Ball knowers seem to all agree that John Bates is an elite blocking tight end. For some reason, PFF gave him a 49.9 run blocking grade last year. I know you guys don't work at PFF, but could you talk about what makes Bates so good and maybe what is missing from PFF's grades? Love the show. Keep up the good work. Thanks, Max. So, appreciate the question. Yeah, Logan.
Great question. Now, off you buckle go. In. We've got an hour. We've got to talk about tight ends blocking. Here we go. So the one thing about PFF is the way they grade is, I'm trying to remember the exact metric, but it's like a plus is a knockdown. So like a bonus play. So like they call it like a one is what they call it, is a knockdown. So anytime that you as an offender get that guy on the ground, it's a one. If it's just a good block, it's a zero. It's like not a plus or negative. And if you lose, it's a negative, right? So I really don't love that metric for PFF for linemen. I don't think it's indicative of how productive they are. So for example, like one of the hardest blocks, in my opinion, in football is a center reaching the play side shade. So the guy that's off his snap hand shoulder, right? If a center can do that, man, like think like Jason Kelce. Like yeah. That's like Hall of Fame caliber of center. They give that a zero, right? For a tight end, like man reaching a wide nine is one of the most challenging things at the position.
So we're talking down block. This is one where we just need to bring out the whiteboard as well.
Yeah. But so like a wide nine is like, you know, you got DeMarcus. I got DeMarcus Ware out here. I'm on the right side. I got DeMarcus Ware one-on-one. I have no inside help. The tackle's in a double team with the guard. They're double teaming the three technique. I am by myself on an island versus the best player in football right now.
Yeah.
Right? Von Miller, great example.
And you gotta get outside of him and pin him back inside.
So this is the sweet science of blocking outside zone, Craig. I got to make him feel like I'm gonna reach him, but not actually reach him. Not be too short, not be too wide, because if I'm too wide, he's gonna beat me inside. And if I'm too short, he's gonna set a hard edge. I gotta be right in that Goldilocks zone, physically down the middle, not duck my head because he's athletic enough to move, and they give that a zero. Right. So that drives me nuts because it's like that block. When I see a tight end make that block, like I'm like, that dude is an absolute maniac. Right. It's the same thing on power, for example. Right. Or duo is a good example. So let's say I got a six technique, head up screws on me, and it's a big, like, you know, Cam Jordan defensive end. Right. The offensive line, they're going to double the three technique. I'm by myself versus one of the best run stopping players in football. And they give that a zero. That should for sure be a plus, in my opinion, right? But they don't have the subjectivity to the grade because they want anybody to be able to do the grading system. They want my mom to be able to get the metric and be like, is the guy on the ground? No. Is the block completed? Yes. It's a zero, right? And did the guy lose his block? So is the guy in between, is the guy attacking the ball carrier? That's a negative one, right? So that's the metric is so simple. It doesn't account, much like the separation metric for Luke McCaffrey, it doesn't account for any of the nuance of blocking at the position. For anyone blocking, even receivers, fullbacks, running back, any of that stuff, no nuance there. It's just, did they meet this binary? It's not binary because there's three elements, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Metric, right? So when I look at what they asked John Bates to do, they asked him to do really hard things often. So I know, having done it, how hard this is. I know when he's playing the New Orleans Saints and he's got a down block, a six technique, head up six, one of these big 280-pound defensive ends, like that's where you get paid, right? That as a blocking tight end, that's where you make your money. And when you go around the league, no one does it as well as him. He's going to lose that block. That guy is making more money than him. He's a better athlete than him. He's bigger and stronger and faster. He's going to lose it. But John Bates is able to kind of survive the down, give the back an opportunity. Again, it's what I did for the majority of my career. I don't think they understand. They definitely don't. How challenging some of that stuff is from a technical and a physical standpoint. And so when I see that grade, I'm like, if you go watch the film, I know this is a high leverage block. They're putting John on an island here. You don't do that with someone you don't think can handle it. And he does a really good job of it week in and week out. So as an example, like my PFF run blocking grade was always hit or miss, right? But I'm blocking Calais Campbell on a down block versus the 49ers. Like he's 6'8", 290. Like at some point I'm going to lose, right? But did I give the back enough opportunity to hit the cut? Yes. Like, so that's where I'd say like it gets understanding the challenge of the position and why he's getting paid so much money to do that is because he's like one of probably right now he's one of one in terms of guys that do that at a high level. You know, he's the Travis Kelce of run blocking tight ends. And again, like that's from a guy who did it for a long time and I have a ton of respect for his game. So
believe it or not, Logan, I don't have a ton to add here. Sure. Okay. I think that was a great explanation. And like, obviously, I guess what I would add is the value of that versus the value of Travis Kelce are different values, which is why Travis Kelce makes a lot more money. If Logan Paulson could have been Travis Kelce, I think
I would have done that.
I don't think you would be doing a different podcast because he's got a podcast, and I do think they have a few more listeners than us, although that might have something to do with some other factors. But I do think that the what that allows you to do as an offense is got to be pretty cool if you're Cliff to be like, oh, I can trust this guy to do that, because otherwise you have to come up with other solutions and or just not call those plays. And so I do think it allows for a wider array of stuff. And then the other piece too is this question is about run blocking, but he's also a guy that you can trust on an island almost like a tackle as a pass blocker. And yeah, it's not ideal when he's got if he's got to block Myles Garrett, but like, what is ideal blocking Myles Garrett? Myles Garrett tripping over a shoelace is ideal to block Myles Garrett. Outside of that, like you're going to have to live with some stuff. But I think that what that allows you to do is a lot of different stuff. And then I think the next big step for John is obviously to become a more reliable and better pass catcher. And that's something that you've talked about that you wish you had focused on that a little bit more in your career, instead of just leaning into the thing that was kind of your superpower of this incredible blocking tight end, to be like, okay, how do I get on the field for more stuff? Because that opens up the playbook even more. And I think we saw some of that last year where they were not afraid to use him as a receiver. And that made the offense less predictable, because it can't just be, oh, when John Bates is in the game, we're going to run the football. And I think that's the interesting thing to come here with Cliff, this offense and Bates moving forward now that they've signed him up long term.
Yeah, think about, just how open he is on some of those throughs. Like when he comes in, you're like, this is a run.
Yeah.
And he's able to kind of work like this pop pass, and the defense, they're like, you can tell it's a check when he's in the game, right? And so they'll come up, they'll fit the run hard, and he's wide open on some stuff. And again, that's because of his impact as a run blocker. And think about how easy that throw is for Jaden Daniels. It's like an easy button once or twice a game. And I think that's awesome. And again, like one of the things you said that the staff said is they want to make sure he develops as a pass catcher.
Yeah.
They're not doing that to be altruistic. They're doing that because they understand. Like, so for example, when I was here in Washington, me and Darrell Young, we went in the game in regular personnel. So 21 teams would match us in goal line personnel because we were so effective at running the ball out of that. So imagine if we could run like a little pop pass or a play action pass, or we could get someone who could win versus man to man coverage. Like, that's devastating, because now all of a sudden they've tilted their hand and said, shoot, this is how we're going to play this, because you guys are really good running the football in this formation. You've got two guys that are pretty physical that can attack our edges. Now, like, shoot, like that's easy for the quarterback. And so building the offense out and taking advantage of those tells that the defense is trying to indicate on is extremely helpful. And so, again, I think I look at John, what he does, the matchups they put him in, how he wins those matchups the majority of the time, in my opinion, and what he can do as a pass catcher, given more opportunity. And I think it's just a good piece for your offense. And there's a reason that all these guys, teams are looking for this position, this blocking wide that can block an end, but also run a seam. like, because it makes your offense so much more dangerous.
Yeah. And you only have to do that stuff often enough to kind of get teams to stop matching you in goal line. And then you get right back to being like, okay, now we got the advantage again. Now we're just gonna run the ball down your throat because that's what we want to do with this guy in there in the first place. So it's just, you know, you got to have the change up and throw it often enough that you can then rock the fastball with regularity and effectiveness. Logan Paulson there. Craig Hoffman here, thanking you for your mailbag questions. Great ones today. Let's get more of them in. We got a couple saved, but we certainly have some room to get more in next week's mailbag. Not exactly sure what we're doing Thursday's show yet. We'll definitely take a look probably at some of the UDFAs as we're getting ready for rookie minicamp. Preview that, what kind of happens at a rookie minicamp. We'll talk about that a little bit. And then we'll review minicamp next week on the show. So got lots coming here on Take Command. We got some guests that we've reached out to as well. So hopefully have some fun off-season conversations now that we're really in the throes of it. Although, Logan, OTAs are happening now. So, like, what is the off-season? July. July is the off-season. That's when nothing happens.
Silly season.
Yeah, that's when we really get into, like, ranking season. But for now, having some fun with what's going on because there's still stuff happening. All right, that's our show. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Subscribe wherever you are doing so right now, and we'll see you next time on Take Command. Thanks for watching this clip. All right, that is Take Command Podcast. You can, of course, check that out anywhere you get your podcast. And Anthony, actually, you know, I mentioned there at the end, there's some guests we had reached out to. One of them we got on the books. You want me to tell you who it is?
Sure.
Yeah, let's say we can't do it next because we actually have one of this person's colleagues coming up next. ESPN's Greg Wyshynski going to join us to talk Caps at 6 o'clock. Mina Kimes is going to join us on next week's Take Command. Mina and Logan and I are going to talk on Thursday afternoon, so that will be out as soon as we are done taping it on Thursday. So Mina Kimes next week on Take Command, but also your mailbag questions that you can get in at HoffmanShow.com. Use the contact page, and Logan and I will answer more coming up on next week's show. When we get back, though, as I just mentioned, Greg Wyshynski talking Caps here on the Team 980.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50. Code LISTEN50.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic salad kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game. Like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way. With stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colone for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.